I'm so sorry, Mr. Stark, Edward says when we meet him in the parking area behind the restaurant. She assured me that she cleared it with you.
Don't worry about it, Damien says. How was she?
I understand there was some trouble with the young man she's been seeing. You might have to restock the limo supply of scotch.
Damien grimaces.
Shall we go check on her?
He asks. I nod. It's already after midnight, and now that Jamie's gone AWOL, I'm ready to go home. I start to move toward the limo, but Ollie's words hold me back.
Rain was just stringing her along.
I turn back to him. Well, yeah, obviously.
Obviously?
He jabs a finger toward Damien.
He's doing the same thing to you.
I grab Damien's hand, as much because I want his touch as to keep him right here beside me. What the hell are you talking about?
He keeps you around, but it's not real.
He holds up his hands and flexes his wrists.
It's just kink and fun, and when he's tired, he'll toss you aside. You little shit, Damien says.
I'm wrong? Really?
You know damn well it's just a game to you. That's why you never tell her shit. That's why you haven't even told her that you've been indicted in Germany for murder.
Chapter 23. Murder. I look from Ollie to Damien. Ollie looks smug. Damien looks confused.
There's no indictment, Damien says.
For a moment, Ollie appears scared. Then he rallies.
No, apparently they were just stalling. The indictment came in just a few minutes ago. You didn't know?
Wait, I say. My head is spinning, and I'm having a hard time figuring out exactly what I'm feeling. Anger? Hurt? Fear? Confusion? They are all jostling for position inside me, and at that moment, it feels a bit as though my head is going to explode. I think about those ceramic shards, and I wish to hell I'd pocketed one. No. Just breathe. You can do this. I take a deep breath and turn to Damien. All this time, I've been assuming that the German indictment is some business violation. And it was actually a murder investigation? His hesitation seems to last a lifetime, and throughout his silence, his eyes look only at me, as if he's trying to find the answer to the question hidden deep inside me somewhere.
Yes, he says.
And there it is, the biggest secret of all, and one I gave him about 9 billion opportunities to reveal. I think about the times I mentioned German regulations, about the times he let me go on believing that it was just a business thing, just Stark International dealing with the kind of problem huge corporations deal with. I thought your company had broken some regulation about zoning codes or paid too little in taxes or something. This is...
worse, Damien says. Much worse.
I wait for him to say more. To explain, to lie, something, anything. He stays silent. I suck in air through my teeth, then press my fingers to my temples. I need to think. Mostly, I just need to be alone. I'm going, I say. I need to check on Jamie.
All right,
Damien says, his voice a little too calm.
Edward and I will drop you at home.
I'll get home on my own, thanks.
I'll drive you, Ollie says.
The hell you will, I snap. With Damien, I'm lost in a maelstrom of anger and sadness and confusion and God knows what else. With Ollie, I'm just plain old pissed. I'll take a taxi. I turn once as I walk away, and my eyes find Damien's. I hesitate, expecting him to call after me, but he doesn't, and I fight the urge to hug myself
to ward off a coming chill. Slowly, I turn my back to Damien, and I continue toward the street. I'm hurt, and I'm confused. But right now, I just need to focus on one thing. I just need to get home. It's an easy shot over the hill from Beverly Hills to Studio City, and I'm home in no time. I hurry inside, expecting to find Jamie in tears on her bed. She's not home. Okay. I just have to think. Where could she be? I know Jamie well enough to know that she may try to soothe a bruised ego by banging some other guy, and I mentally start running through the single men in our complex that she hasn't already gotten horizontal with. That's one thing about Jamie. She rarely goes in for repeat performances. As if to underscore the brilliance of my thinking, a series of moans and groans floats in from next door. Douglas, once again getting lucky. At least I can cross him off my list. Although Douglas has made it clear he'd be up for round two, Jamie has repeatedly said no. I pace the apartment, wondering where she could be. I call the divey bar on the corner near our condo, but she hasn't been there in days. I call Steve and Anderson, but they haven't talked to her. They give me the names of a few other mutual friends. I call them, but nobody's heard from her tonight. Shit. Even though I know it will do no good whatsoever, I call the police. I'm coherent enough to forego 911 and call the station directly. I speak to the officer in charge, explaining that my roommate came home plastered, but she's not here now, and I'm worried that she's dead in a ditch somewhere. He's nice enough, but he's also not sending anyone to help. Not until she's been gone for a hell of a lot longer than a few hours. I close my eyes and think. Maybe she said something to Edward? That she was going to change and to go clubbing? That she was going to visit a friend? That she was going to LAX to splurge on a red eye to New York? I don't have a number for Edward, and my finger hesitates over Damien's name. I'm not ready to talk to him, but I have to know. I suck in a breath, count to three, and call. He answers on the first ring, and, damn me, I can't even get the words out because of the tears that are clogging my throat. I'm still on the phone with him, choking out the story, asking him if I can speak to Edward, when he walks through the front door. I blink in confusion as he walks to me and very gently takes the phone from my hand and ends the call. How did you get here so fast?
Edward is parked at the end of the block. I was planning to come over anyway, but I was giving you time.
Oh, did you ask him?
She didn't say anything to him, Damien says, and he walked her to the door and heard her lock it after he left. He assumed she'd be asleep in minutes.
I press my hand against my forehead. I need to figure out what to do next, but it's all blank. I don't know what to do. I am completely lost, and I'm scared to death. She's drunk, and she's pissed, and she's going to do something stupid.
Did you check for her car?
Damn it, I say. I didn't even think about it.
She could have taken a taxi or had a friend pick her up, but if it's still here, it's a start. I can get one of my security guys calling the taxi services to see if there was a call, and then...
I've been sprinting for the front door as he speaks, ready to go look at her parking space. I yank it open and freeze at the sight of Jamie standing there, her clothes askew, her hair a mess, but otherwise looking none the worse for the wear. James! I pull her into my embrace and back off long enough to inspect her for hidden injuries. Are you okay? Where were you? She shrugs, but for just a second, her eyes dart to the wall we share with Douglas. Oh, James, I say, but she looks so damned miserable that I don't say anything else. The lecture can wait. Right now, I need to put my very drunk, very upset best friend to bed. I'm going to go help her, I tell Damien. I hesitate for a moment, then add, I'll be right back. He nods, and I help Jamie to her room, then out of her clothes. She slides into bed in her bra and panties.
I fucked up, didn't I?
She asks. Brian Rain is the fuck up, I say. You just need to sleep.
Sleep,
she repeats, as if it's the most wonderful thing in the world.
Night, James,
I whisper. I start to leave, but she grabs my hand.
You're lucky,
she says.
Me loves you.
I close my eyes tight to keep the tears at bay. I want to tell her everything, but my best friend is only half conscious, and the man who might love me, but who has most definitely lied to me, is waiting for me in the living room. I'm not ready for this, but I leave Jamie's room and return to Damien. He's ending a call as I return.
That was Edward, he says. I'm sending him home. I'm staying here tonight.
I don't think...
I'm staying, he says. In your bed, on the couch, in the goddamn bathtub. I don't care, but you're not getting rid of me. Not tonight.
Fine, whatever. I can hear the exhaustion in my voice. But I'm going to bed. I eye the bed that fills the living room. Our bed. And the sadness that washes over me is almost enough to bring me to my knees. The bed in my room, I clarify. There's a spare blanket in the hall cabinet. Help yourself to whatever's in the fridge. And then I turn around, go to my room, and shut the door behind me. 5 minutes later, I'm in bed, eyes wide open, when there is a soft tap at my door. I could pretend to be asleep. For a moment, I consider it. But while part of me is still hurt and angry, the other part craves Damien. It's that other part that wins. Come in, I say. He enters with 2 mugs of hot chocolate. I can't help but smile. Where did you find that?
Your cupboard, he said. Okay.
I nod. I am not in the mood for wine or liquor, but chocolate comfort is definitely welcome. He puts mine on the bedside table, then sits on the edge of the bed. Silence hangs heavy between us.
It's Richter,
he finally says, breaking the stillness.
I'm being charged with Richter's murder.
I try to process this information, fitting it in with what I know of Damien and what I know about Richter's death. But it was suicide, I say, and years ago.
They're relying in part on the fact that I inherited his money.
You did? He nods.
My first million. It was kept out of the press. I paid Charles a good portion of that money to make sure it stayed out of the press. My enemies will argue that $1 million is a strong motive.
That's what they're arguing? But you were just a kid. Everyone in the world heard the story at the time it happened. Young tennis superstar Damien Stark's coach committed suicide by leaping to his death from a Munich-based tennis center. And you were already making money.
Most people with money want more.
It's still a ridiculous argument, I say. He probably left you the money for the same reason he killed himself. He felt guilty for being an abusive slime bag.
I'm not sure Richter ever felt a moment of guilt in his life,
Damien says.
At any rate, I believe they're putting more stock in the witness than into the money.
So who is this witness?
A janitor. Elias Schmidt. He actually came forward right after Richter died. But my father paid him off and he disappeared before he said anything to the police. Evelyn was around during all of that. So was Charles. There was a tell-all book in the works that was going with the hypothesis that I'd killed my coach. They got it shut down, and the rumors locked up tight.
I'm trying to follow all of this. So the janitor was paid off, but he came back?
No, Damien says. He didn't come back. The German police found out about him, and they went to him.
How?
I don't know,
Damien says calmly. Everything about him is calm, and I realize that he's gone into corporate mode. He's relating the details of the transaction, but he's not getting emotionally involved.
But I think my father tipped them.
I am beyond shocked. What? Why? Why on earth would he do that?
To punish me for not giving him any more money.
I can't help the shiver that rips through me. My relationship with my mom is fucked up, but this is out in the stratosphere. The truth is, I'm scared. But they'll cave once you put on your defense. It'll be fine. I mean, it will cost you a boatload of money, but you have about a billion boats of money, right? And you're innocent, so eventually they'll drop the charges.
Money helps, Damien says, but it's not a guarantee. And innocent people get convicted all the time. And besides,
he adds, his voice as level as I have ever heard it,
I'm not innocent.
Chapter 24. I stare, certain that I could not possibly have heard his words right. No, no, I say. Richter killed himself. He jumped off a building and committed suicide. If I say it enough, it will have to be true.
He fell to his death, yes.
I stare at Damien's face. This man that I have fallen for so completely. Does he have it within him to kill a man? The answer is not long in coming. I know that he does. He would kill to protect me. I am certain of it. And he would kill to protect himself. Suddenly, I no longer doubt his words. I shiver, but not because I am horrified. No. I tremble because I fear that I will lose him, that he will be convicted for protecting himself against a man who was truly a monster.
Nikki,
he says, his voice infinitely sad.
I'm sorry. I'll go.
He starts to get up off the bed. No! The word seems ripped from me, and I grab hard to his hand and pull him back down. Don't leave me. You did what you had to do. What your father should have done, the bastard. I swear if I'd been around back then and knew what that son of a bitch was doing to you, I would have killed him myself. Slowly, Damien closes his eyes. I think that it is relief that I see on his face. Tell me exactly what happened, I say gently. Damien lets go of my hand and stands up. For a moment, I'm afraid that he is leaving anyway, but then I realize that he just needs to move. He walks around the bed, then pauses in front of the Monet. Haystacks in a field, and the splendid colors of sunset. Sunset. That is our safe word. The word that Damien told me to pick that very first night that I was his. Mine to use if he went too far. I look at him, and I hope that he will not invoke the word now. I know that it must be hard to go back, to tell me what happened that night. But I need to hear it. More, I need for Damien to tell me. And I fervently hope that the secrets he is so used to keeping won't tie his tongue now. Damien? He doesn't turn around. Doesn't even move. But I hear his voice, low and steady.
It started when I was 9. The touching. The threats. I won't tell you the details. I don't want those memories in my head, much less in yours. But I will tell you it was horrible. I hated him. I hated my father. and I hated myself. Not because I was ashamed. I was never ashamed. But because I had no power to stop him. He turns to me. I learned how important power is. It's the only thing that can truly protect you. And back then, I had none.
I barely nod, afraid that if I speak or react too much, he will stop talking.
It went on for years. I grew bigger and stronger, but he was a huge man. And as I got older, he added more threats to his repertoire. He had photographs. And there were...
He pauses and takes a deep breath.
There were other things that he threatened.
What changed? I say gently. I don't want him to relive all those years. I just want to know what happened the night Richter died.
All that time, he never raped me.
His voice is so low and monotone that it gives me chills.
When I was 14, we were in Germany at a tennis center in Munich. I went up to the courts on the roof one night. I don't remember why. I couldn't sleep. I was antsy. Whatever. He came up too. He'd been drinking. I could smell it on him. I tried to go back down, and he blocked me. Tried. For the first time, he tried to take his sick games further.
Damien meets my eyes.
I didn't let him.
You pushed him off the roof? I can barely hear through the pounding of my pulse in my ears.
No,
he says. I'm confused. What happened?
We fought, he says. I hit him with my racket. He grabbed it out of my hands, smacked me across the back of my head with it. I'm lucky the wound wasn't visible, or the police might have been more interested in me at the time. But it was a nasty fight. And we were at the edge of the roof, an area without the fencing that was by the courts to keep stray balls from going over. I don't remember exactly what happened. He lunged for me, and I got a good shove in. He stumbled backward, and then tripped over something. I'm still not sure what. He was drunk, so maybe it was his own 2 feet. He went over, but he managed to grab the ledge. He was hanging there, and I was frozen to the spot. I couldn't move. He called for me to help him.
I realize that I'm holding my breath.
I just stood there. He screamed for me. And I can remember the way my head was still throbbing from his blow. But I took one step toward him. One step. And then I stopped. And then he fell.
He closes his eyes, and I see the tremor that shakes his body.
I went back to my room, but I didn't sleep. The next morning, the assistant coach burst in with the news that Richter was dead.
They can't possibly convict you, I say. You did nothing wrong.
There was a moment when I could have saved him, he says. I could have moved faster. I could have reached him.
Don't you dare feel guilty for could have, I say. His eyes are hard when he looks at me.
I don't. I don't regret it for an instant.
Damien, don't you see? You just need to tell the police all of this.
All of what? All of the abuse?
Yes, I say.
No.
But...
Nikki, I said no.
I draw in a deep breath. So what happens now?
I called Charles from the limo. We're going to Munich tomorrow. The legal team is already in place. I'm hoping that we'll be able to present a decent defense.
You have a decent defense.
Don't push me on that, Nikki. I'm not making that aspect of my life public. Richter took a lot from me, but he's not taking my privacy, too.
I nod, because there is no point in arguing this right now. So, the tennis center bigwigs in Germany, I begin. Charles and your dad were hoping that if you endorsed the Richter Tennis Center here, that those folks would pull strings with the cops?
That's right.
But you said your dad started it all.
I said that I think he did.
Damien clarifies.
I don't know everything that goes on in my father's head, but I do know that before I settled with Paget, he had at least 2 meetings with my father. Considering your conversation with Carl, I think he may have been involved too. I think my father must have told Paget about the janitor. Schmidt apparently witnessed our fight, though he left before Richter went off the roof.
That was how Paget was going to hurt you before you settled? When Carl said the shit was going to hit the fan, he must have meant the janitor. He was going to get the janitor to go public?
I think so. He'd request more money for himself, and for my father, who was pulling the strings. But then when Paget settled, my dad was frustrated that the plan went awry. So he tipped the German police. I don't think he expected it to go this far. The case is very cold, after all, and was never officially treated as a murder. The threat was really to get my attention, and my money.
But the German police heated it back up again.
Yes. And so my father wanted me to appear squeaky clean. His house, his car, and much of his bank account are actually in my name. I get convicted, or I need funds for my defense, and all of that might go away. Worse for him, the public might find out that he was complicit in what Richter did to me.
Your father is a son of a bitch, I say harshly.
Yes,
Damien says.
He is.
But you're going to come out of this just fine. I cannot even conceive of the possibility that he will be convicted.
I'm not so sure, he admits. But right now, I don't want to think about it anymore.
I pull the covers back and hold out my hand. Then don't. He meets my eyes.
I should have told you.
Yes, I agree. But you've told me now. For a moment, all I can see is sadness in his eyes. Then he smiles, and it is as if light is filling my dim bedroom.
Don't ever forget how much you mean to me, Nikki,
he says as he moves to my side. I won't, but nothing's going to happen to you. He is busy removing the t-shirt that I wear in lieu of pajamas, but he looks at me, his expression serious.
You know that I will always protect you, that I will do whatever it takes to protect you.
Stop, I say firmly. You won't be convicted. You aren't going to jail. You're staying right here, with me. He says nothing, just leans in and presses his forehead against mine. My shirt is off now. His breath on my bare skin is magic.
I'm going to make love to you tonight, he says. Slow and sweet, and as long as we can stand it.
That will be a very long time, I say, as he begins to trail kisses down my neck and over the swell of my breast. Already, my body is tight with desire for him. Already, I can feel his erection straining against his slacks. Take them off, I say. I want to feel you. I want you against me. I want you so close that I can't tell where I end and you begin. He raises off me long enough to look at me. Slowly, his mouth curves into a smile.
Yes, ma'am,
he says, drawing a laugh from me. He rolls off the bed and slowly unbuttons his shirt. I watch, enjoying the show, enjoying even more the knowledge that this perfect specimen of a man is mine. He folds the shirt and puts it on my desk. He toes off his shoes and eases his pants off. His briefs are gray, but even in the dim light, I can see his erection straining behind the cotton. He takes them off, and I realize that I am licking my lips. Damien notices at the same time, and his soft chuckle makes me blush.
"What exactly does the lady want?"
he asks. "I want to touch you," I say. "I want to taste you. I want to take you to heaven."
"What a coincidence,"
he says as he climbs in beside me.
"I want exactly the same thing."
He is on his knees, and he pulls me up so that I am kneeling in front of him. Slowly he strokes my face, his eyes hard upon me.
"I want to memorize you,"
he says.
"Every line, every curve. The way you smell, the way you taste. I want to lock you in my memory so that I will never be without you."
"You never will," I say.
"Nikki."
I expect him to say more, or to kiss me, but my name hangs in the air. For a brief, odd moment, I feel a twinge of fear, but I shove it away. He will not be convicted. He will not be taken from me. I believe it. I do. But as I lie back, I reach for him and pull him down onto me, because I cannot stand him being away from me for even a second longer than necessary. "No toys," I say, then brush my lips over his. "No kink. No games. Just you inside me. That's all I want tonight, Damien. That's all I need." His hands stroke me. His lips dance over me.
"That's all I need, too," he says. "You, Nikki. You in my arms. You burned into my memory. You drawing me in deep. Keeping me. Claiming me."
My hands are on his back, on the curve of his ass. My legs are parted, my knees up. I bring my legs closer so that his body brushes my skin as we move together. Body against body, skin against skin. I do not want the sweetness of this moment to end, but I am wet and ready, and I have to have him. I have to feel him inside me. I have to know that he is mine, and that I am his, and that we are really together, and that we always will be. "Damien," I beg. "Now, please, please, I need you now." He shifts on the bed, easing my legs apart, opening me up for him. Then the tip of his cock is at my sex. And he's moving slowly, thrusting slowly, so maddeningly slowly, until I am certain that I shall lose my mind. "Now," I beg. "Damien, now. I need you now."
"I need you too, Nikki,"
he says, and thrusts hard inside me, filling me, making me arch up with the pleasure that rockets through me, as if we are a circuit, and our joining is sending electricity spinning round and round between us. He works a magical rhythm, and I rise to meet each thrust, my body drawing him in, my muscles tightening, my orgasm building, until I feel as though I am not lying on the bed, but floating above it. Until I am no longer a woman, but an explosion of stars. Until all I am is Damien's, and that is all I ever want to be. Chapter 25. Damien leaves early the next morning to go meet with Charles at the Tower apartment so that he can pack for Germany. I peek in on Jamie, but she's dead to the world. I'm bummed, because I'm worried about Damien. And I want someone to talk to, but I also know she needs to sleep it off. My worries can wait. I putter around the kitchen for a few minutes, debating between eggs or a bagel, and end up having black coffee. I can't shake this sense of foreboding that has settled over me, and I finally decide that I have to see Damien. I don't care if he is getting ready to leave for Munich. I need to see him one more time. I need to hold him and tell him in the light of day that everything he told me last night changes nothing, that I believe in him. I need to tell him that I love him. I change quickly into a peasant skirt, a pink tank top layered over a white one, and flip-flops, then limit my hair and makeup routine to lip gloss and mascara. I don't know what time their plane is scheduled to leave, and I cannot risk being late. Since I don't know if the paparazzi are clinging like leeches to the front sidewalk, I use the back route to the parking area. Yes, they might swarm my car as I exit the gate, but with any luck, I'll be down the street before they realize it's me. As it turns out, I'm lucky. There is a lone photographer camped out on the sidewalk in a lawn chair. I manage a tight grin. As far as I'm concerned, he's in league with the devil. And I can think of little that is more hellish than sitting outside during a sweltering summer in the San Fernando Valley when the beach and cool ocean breezes are only a few miles away. My thoughts, however, don't remain long with the paparazzi. Instead, I'm concentrating on only two things, getting to Damien and working the clutch exactly right so that the Honda doesn't stall out on me. By some miracle, I get to downtown stall-free, and then it is only a few blocks before I pull into the underground parking structure that serves Stark Tower and the adjacent building. I grab the closest parking place, yank my purse out of the passenger seat, and sprint to the elevator. Joe is working the security desk, and I wave at him as I jog by in the lobby. "I'm going to the apartment," I call. "Buzz me up?"
"Of course, Ms. Fairchild."
Yes, there are definitely perks to being the boss's girlfriend. The elevator is open for me when I get to the proper bank. I step inside, press the button, and tap my foot for the entire ride to the top. I still feel antsy, and despite being an express, the elevator can't move fast enough to suit me. The doors open onto the apartment side of the penthouse, and I step out into the foyer. I don't hear Damien or Charles, but I assume that they have not left for Germany, since surely Joe would have told me. "Damien?" I call softly. I hear a thump from the back of the apartment and hurry in that direction, hoping that it is Damien and that he is alone. I find him in the bedroom, a suitcase open on the bed. His back is to me, but flip-flops are not quiet shoes, and he turns as I enter the room. I start to go to him. I want nothing more than to lose myself in his embrace, but something in his expression stops me. There is pleasure and surprise, yes, but there is also wariness. And something darker, too. Something I don't recognize, but that I fear is regret. "Damien?" I am scared now, and for no reason, and the rising of this unpleasant emotion bothers me. This is Damien, the man who would never hurt me, who would move mountains to protect me. So what the hell am I afraid of? There is, however, a tiny part of me that knows what I fear, and hopes with a desperate fervency that I am wrong.
"Nikki."
The smile that touches his lips is so warm and genuine that I am emboldened. Whatever gloom has settled over me is simply wrong, and I shove it away and hurry toward Damien. "I had to come say goodbye again," I say.
"I'm glad you did," he says. "I shouldn't have left without saying goodbye to you. I'm going to miss you more than you can imagine."
There is nothing strange about his tone, and he is looking at me with such familiar adoration, I think that my heart will burst. Even so, the sense of dread returns. I press on anyway. "I wanted you to know that what you told me last night changes nothing.
I don't care if you pushed Richter off the roof on purpose. What he did to you was reprehensible, and I will stick by you, Damien. No matter what, I am not running. He looks at me with steady eyes and a sad smile.
I believe you, he says.
Do you remember when you asked me to play our game again? You said that you wanted to know that I couldn't leave you, no matter what I might learn about you. That you were afraid I'd leave if I knew your secrets. Well, I'm guessing I know pretty much everything now, and I'm not going anywhere. I love you, Damien Stark, and I'm staying right by your side. He draws in a sharp breath, and the expression on his face looks almost pained, which really isn't the reaction that I was hoping for.
I know you won't leave.
I won't, I say, warily. His mood is definitely off, but then again, he's about to fly to a foreign country to be tried for murder. I should probably cut him a little slack. I won't ever go.
Which is why I have to be the one to leave you.
I freeze, then play back his words in my head. That can't be right. Surely he didn't say what I think he said.
I'm sorry,
he says. This time, the words are slow and clear, and so gentle they bring tears to my eyes.
I'm breaking up with you, Nikki. It's over.
A roaring fills my ears. I must be hallucinating. Dreaming. This is a nightmare. Because there is no way in hell that Damien Stark just said those words to me. And yet I am standing here, and I am looking at him, and the chill that has settled over me doesn't have the quality of a dream. It is reality. It is desolation. I remember its cold harshness from my childhood, and that is not a reality to which I want to return. I realize that I have been slowly shaking my head, and I force myself to speak. No, it's never over. I'm yours, Damien. Forever. You said so yourself. He winces and turns his head away as if he can't stand the memory of those words.
I was wrong.
The hell you were! What the hell is going on here?
I'm angry now, and I'm glad of it.
Angry Nikki won't cry. Angry Nikki will demand some goddamned answers.
I told you that I would leave if that was what it took to protect you.
His voice is so calm and even that I want to smack him. Protect me? Damien, we're doing fine. I'm doing fine.
You're not fine. You're a mess with all the press about the portrait, Nikki. Don't try to deny it. I saw the way you looked in the bathroom. You wanted to slice deep into your flesh. You were ready to break the mirror to get at the glass. You wanted blood, Nikki. You wanted pain.
I am silent. I can't argue, because what he says is true. I can only say simply, but I didn't go there.
It will get worse. It already has.
I don't know what he's talking about.
The press, Nikki. They're not focusing on me. Damien Stark indicted for murder. You'd think that would be interesting, right? Apparently, not as interesting as his girlfriend. Who, according to those assholes, isn't really his girlfriend at all. Just an opportunistic little whore who will sleep with anyone who can help her get ahead. Murderers included.
My stomach twists violently, and I'm grateful I only had coffee this morning. I don't care. I lie. I can deal.
You shouldn't have to.
Damn it, Damien. I'm not a mom-and-pop food company. Pulling out isn't going to save me. You're going to destroy me. I need you. You. Don't you get that?
I can't bear to see you broken. Not when I'm the one who is breaking you.
You are breaking me, I shout. If you walk away from me, you're going to snap me in two.
No, he says simply.
I only realize I am crying when I taste the salt of my tears. I thought you said I was strong. Or was that just bullshit?
You are, he says,
his voice maddeningly calm.
Strong enough to stay despite me dragging you into hell. I'm the one who's weak, Nikki, because I kept you in the spotlight for too damn long. I couldn't leave you, and that hurt you. But I'm fixing it now.
He zips up the suitcase and hefts it off the bed. For a moment, he stands there, just looking at me. I am scrambling for words, trying to figure out the magic formula to make him take it all back. But this is not a fairy tale, and I am learning the hard way that there is no happily ever after. Then he walks to the door. He is leaving me. Damien Stark, the man I trusted above all others to never hurt me. He is walking away from me, and he's ripping my heart out as he goes. Cold fury whips through me, laced with desolation. Tears trail down my cheeks as I bend and unfasten the emerald ankle bracelet. I take a breath and hurl it at him. Damn you, Damien Stark, I whisper. Damn you for giving up on us. He pauses, and I see the pain on his face. He glances down at where the bracelet has landed on his feet. He starts to reach for it, then stops. I watch his face, expecting words of comfort, but they don't come. Instead, I hear only the two words I wish were silenced.
Goodbye, Nikki.
And then he is gone. I am not sure how I managed the drive to Malibu, but I do. And when I pull into Evelyn's drive, I can barely see, what with the tears swimming in my eyes.
Good God, Texas, she says as she pulls open the door. What happened to you?
He left me, I say, choking the words out between sobs. He thinks he's protecting me, and so he dumped me.
She sucks in air.
Damn fool of a boy, she says. I don't care what everyone says about him being a goddamned genius. He fucked this one up, Texas. He damn sure did.
Her words only make me cry harder.
Oh, hell, girl. Get inside.
Is Blaine here?
He's in the studio,
she says, referring to a separate building on the property.
It's okay. Cry all you want.
I don't want to cry, I say. I want him back. But he's so damned convinced he's doing the right thing.
What the hell does he think he's protecting you from?
She asks, as she leads me to the kitchen and sits me down at the table.
The paparazzi.
Pfft,
she says.
Fuck 'em.
I wish they were that easy to blow off.
I eye her critically.
Blaine didn't tell you?
Tell me what?
I don't want to go into this, but I need help. And she needs to understand why Damien left. Why he thinks that he has to leave.
I have scars,
I finally say. She nods slowly. There's one on the painting.
On your hip.
Looks to be some on your thighs, too, but the shadows make it hard to tell.
So what happened to you, Texas?
I swallow.
I happened to me.
The words hang there, and I wait for my tears, but they do not come. I don't know if it's me or if it's Evelyn, but it's easier to talk about now. No, that's not true. I do know. It's me. Damien has helped me
change the way I look at my flaws. I grimace. God damn him for leaving me.
You're saying that Damien thinks you're going to start up with the cutting again?
I could kiss her for being so focused, so direct. Yes, I say. I haven't. Not since I've been in L.A., but I've come close.
The paparazzi?
She puts a glass of water in front of me, and I sip from it gratefully. And all this craziness about the painting, it got to me.
Hell, that kind of crap would get to anyone.
Now the press is saying all sorts of shit about me sleeping with a murderer, and Damien thinks
that he's got to be the hero and walk away.
God damn the boy. You two aren't supposed to be a tragedy. Trust me, I say wryly. I'm not crazy about the last-minute script change either. So what can I do?
You can haul your ass to Germany and get the boy back.
But he'll just send me home again. He thinks he's being chivalrous, remember? I have to prove to him I can handle it. But how? It's not like I can go a year without cutting and then say, I told you so. So what can I do to prove to him right now that I'll be okay?
Ah, now here's why you came to the right place. Because this is exactly the kind of sneaky shit you pick up after a lifetime in Hollywood. You just need to give the press nowhere else to go.
I'm not following.
They're interested in you as a story. So make the story go away.
I blink, trying to process what she's saying. And then it all clicks into place. I leap out of my chair and throw my arms around Evelyn. You're brilliant!
Damn right I am. Why do you think I'm a legend in this town?
Do you know someone who can handle the press side of things?
Evelyn's smile is as wide as I've ever seen it. Just leave it to me.
I do, and I watch in wonder as the pieces come together. Not 2 hours later, everything is on track for the first press conference of my life.
And what makes it really unique, Evelyn says with a guffaw, is that everything you're going to say is 100% true.
I spend the next hour organizing my thoughts. I'm not shy about speaking in front of a camera. I have my mother's pageant obsession to thank for that. But I am nervous about making sure I'm clear and quotable, with lots of juicy sound bites. When the knock at the door finally comes, and Evelyn opens it to the camera crew, I am ready.
You sure about this, Texas?
It's the only thing I can think of to get him back, I say. And more important, I need to do it for me. She nods.
Okay, then. Let's make you even more famous.
I laugh, but have to acknowledge that she's probably right. I also have to admit that this may not work, but that doesn't matter. What matters is that the princess is going out to kill the dragon instead of hiding in the tower. The crew consists of a cameraman, a reporter, and a producer. I'm not interested in being interviewed, so the reporter says she'll tape the intro later at the studio. This is just me, and I should take my time. I stand in the spot they've lit, wait for the cameraman to signal me, and start talking. My name is Nikki Fairchild, and I recently accepted $1 million as a modeling fee for a nude Blaine original. The completed portrait now hangs in Mr. Damien Stark's Malibu home, and it is an exceptional piece of art. It is both tasteful and erotic, and it does not show my face. I pause to collect my thoughts. The reporter nods encouragement, and I smile. We've only spoken a few words, but I like her. I agreed to the painting, and to the million, because I needed the money. It has not been spent, nor will it be until I am ready. But I also insisted that the arrangement be confidential, and that no one except Mr. Stark and the artist know that it was me in the portrait. Somehow, though, my identity has been revealed, and Mr. Stark and I have been harassed nonstop by reporters and photographers who apparently have nothing better to do with their time. And the truth is, now I have regrets. I wonder, as I say that, if Damien will see this tape. I soldier on. Not about the painting. Not about the money. No. My regret is that I asked Blaine and Mr. Stark to keep my identity confidential in the first place. I will admit that there was a time when I was ashamed of my body, but that time has passed. I think the portrait is outstanding, and I think the modeling fee was fair. Then again, what is a fair price to paint a woman's body? If Mr. Stark had paid me $10, would the press now be calling me a cheap harlot? I glance at Evelyn, who is grinning. To be honest, I think Mr. Stark got off easy. If he wants a second nude portrait, he'll have to pay me $2 million, at least. Near me, the reporter nods encouragingly. As of this morning, the gossip about me has shifted. Apparently, now I'm a woman who would sleep with a murderer to get ahead. Let's think about that. Do I sleep with Damien Stark? I do, and gladly, but not to get ahead. Instead, I am honored and humbled that he wants me in his life and in his bed. I realize suddenly that I am not nervous at all. I feel strong. These words feel right. As for the allegation that Damien Stark is a murderer, I can only say that I do not believe it. The evidence will acquit him. But if by some horrific fault in the universe he is convicted, then that will change nothing. I will not and would not leave his side. I draw a breath and move on to my wrap-up. I do not intend to make any more statements to the press, so I will add one final thing for the record. I am in love with Damien Stark, and I am leaving for Germany in an hour to support him through his trial. He is an innocent man, and he has been wrongly accused. Thank you. I stand in front of the presidential suite at the scarily luxurious Kempinski Hotel in Munich and draw in a breath. I owe a huge debt to Sylvia, who could lose her job if Damien decides to be angry that his assistant told me where he was staying. I'm not sure how he's going to react to seeing me here, and I have no way of knowing if he saw my interview. And even if he did, I have no way of knowing if it moved him. As for that interview, when I was in the taxi from the airport to my hotel, I read through Jamie's half-dozen emails describing how the press was going wild. Apparently, I am no longer a harlot, and Damien is no longer a murderer. Now, we are star-crossed lovers. The press is nothing if not fickle. This time, at least, we're on the warm, fuzzy side of the press. More important, phase one of my plan worked. And knowing that gives me courage. Surely the next part will work, too. Because I really don't want to have to call Sylvia and ask her to book me into the Munich equivalent of a Motel 6. Enough stalling. I draw a deep breath, knock firmly on the door, and wait. A moment later, I hear Damien's voice.
1 minute.
And then I hear the lock turning, and I'm holding my breath as the door is pulled inward. And there he is. He's wearing black trousers, and his shirt hangs open. He looks both dashing and distracted. He's got his arm up as he attempts to fasten the cuff, and when he sees me, he freezes.
Nikki.
Do you want me to get that for you? I ask. Wordlessly, he holds out his arm. I button the cuff from my position in the hallway, then step inside and do the other one. Then, without speaking, I start to work on the line of buttons on the shirt. His body is tense and wary, and I can't tell if he's happy to see me, angry, or uncertain that I am real.
I saw your press conference, he finally says.
Oh? I try to sound light and encouraging, but inside my heart is breaking. If he saw it and wanted me here, wouldn't he have pulled me into his arms?
I didn't expect you here so quickly.
When you know you want to be with someone you love, you want to get there as fast as you can. My smile wavers, and I'm suddenly afraid I'm going to cry. I hadn't even let myself admit until now how much I wanted to hear those three little words from him. But I did. I do. And not only is he not saying them back, but he's probably going to send me away, too.
Oh, Nikki.
There are too many emotions packed into my name, and I cannot sort them out.
No matter what you tell the press, you deserve better than a relationship with a man behind bars.
I deserve you, I say. But if you think I can't handle all of this, then you're right. I can't. Not without you. Damien, don't you get it? I can't just sit on the sidelines and watch them try you for murder. I need to be here. I have to be here. I need you. I pause to draw a breath, and then tilt my head to look him in his eyes. And I think you need me, too. The weight of eternity seems to hang in the second that passes before he answers.
I do, he says. And then, God, Nikki, I do.
It is as if a glass wall around him has shattered. The life returns to his eyes, the smile to his face. Suddenly, his arms are around me, and he's holding me close, and I'm soaking up the rhythm of his heartbeat and breathing in the scent of this man I love so deeply. Then it's okay that I came? My words are tentative, uncertain.
Oh, baby, yes,
he says, and the emotion in his voice almost brings me to tears.
You are my blood. Without you, I'm nothing but a shell.
You should never have walked away, I say.
No,
he says firmly.
I had to. I had to give you that one fair chance to get free of me. Because you will be drawn into hell, Nikki. And though you may think I'm strong, where you are concerned, I am weak. I am selfish. I walked away once to protect you, but I won't do it again. If you want to go, do it now. Otherwise, I will keep you here beside me, because that is where I want you. By my side, Nikki. Always.
I am trembling with relief from his words, and can only nod stupidly.
I've been in hell without you, he says. Every minute was a fight against temptation. I wanted to send a plane for you. To say to hell with whatever was best for you, and scoop you up for my own selfish needs.
I lick my lips. I think I would have been okay with that.
No,
he says, with an awed shake of his head.
I was so proud of you. Those things you said. The risks you took. You exorcised the demons, Nikki. The press may be an irritation, but you've taken their power.